Hey, Pardon My Take listeners. You can find every episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. On today's Pardon My Take, we have Joe Buck and Oliver Hudson, who is brother of Kate Hudson, son of Goldie Hawn and Kurt Russell, and also a really fucking cool guy. We'd never met him. We interviewed both of them because they have a new podcast out. Joe Buck was great as always, even though he's still trying to make playoff Damian happen.
And also, we just wanted to invite Oliver Hudson's family reunion so we can just cast the rest of Boner Dogs.
Exactly. So we have that interview. We have Firefest of the Week. We have a great Mount Flushmore. And we are reviewing King of Kong, Fistful of Quarters, one of the greatest documentaries ever created that doesn't get enough shine. You can watch it on YouTube if you want to. If you hadn't seen it yet, you want to pause it and watch it. It's a quick watch, but it is incredible. So we're going to review that at the end. And also roast. We haven't done roast in a while. Before we do all of that, though.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Oh.
It's Pardon My Take, presented by Bob School Sports.
Welcome to Pardon My Take, presented by the Cash App. Go download it right now. Use code Barstool. You get $10 for free, $10 to the ASPCA. Today is Friday, April 3rd. Friday Energy Boys, we're back. Feeling good. Let's get it. Oh, shoot. We forgot. Let's play our disclaimer first. Let's play the disclaimer.
The other day, I did an open that was viewed 2.4 million times in different places and used illegally in a bunch of places, too. So we've been planning this for a long time. This copyrighted broadcast and telecast is presented by the authority of Intercom, Radio.com, and WFAN, and may not be reproduced or retransmitted without the express written consent of Intercom Communications Corporation and Radio.com. And that means anybody. You want to go get video of me or see part of the show, go to radio.com. Every one of my programs are there.
So that is the new disclaimer that Mike Francesa has put out there. This is basically the biggest sports news of the day, that Mike Francesa has decided that the show that no one is watching or listening to, he is going to decide that the one Twitter account that covers him and puts his clips out there can no longer do so. So the show that no one listens to, now no one listens to.
The MLB model.
Yes.
Yeah. If he was smart, he would just start his own Twitter account for his own show. But I guess he sunk a lot of production cost into doing the mics on app and all that stuff. So he probably doesn't have that much money left to spend on it. Although he gets paid, $1 million a year, $2 million a year?
I don't know. I mean, he only does like a 30-minute show now, but it's so funny because this is, we're in a weird time. Everyone wants content. We're all stuck inside of our homes. And Mike Francesa was like, hey, you know what's a good idea? To make sure that my content is even less accessible to the people.
Mm-hmm. Wait, neither of you guys are recording.
Oh, well, now we're recording.
Correct.
I think do we have to do that again?
No, yes. Liam, we should be fine, right?
Keep this in.
Okay, wait, did we record?
Yeah, I got I have the backup, so we should be good.
All right, yeah, we're good.
So that, I mean, good. That's on you guys at this point for not telling, for not reminding us to click record.
Mm-hmm. So we almost Mike Francesa's ourselves by doing an entire show where no one could listen to it because we forgot
not even
to
us
record.
Yeah. That's how seriously we take keeping our content private, is that we won't even let ourselves put it out.
Yeah, people don't even know we actually do this show every day, but on the off days, we don't record it. We just talk.
Sometimes we just do it just for the sake of art.
Mm-hmm. So we're here. It's Friday. It's still Groundhog's
Day. Is it?
It's not Friday. No, it's not. It's the days are not. They're all together. Well, I feel better. I actually do feel there is still that like feeling of, hey, we're ending a work week, but there's nothing good on the other end of it.
Let's embrace debate. What day of the week does it always feel like? Because it always feels like someday. Is every day a Tuesday? Is every day a Wednesday? Because it's not a Saturday, and it's definitely not a Friday.
No,
not a Monday either, though, because like I don't go to sleep at night dreading waking up the next morning.
I think the schedule is now this. It is Sunday. So starting with Saturday, it's Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Friday.
I don't think that there is
a
Monday.
There's no Friday. Oh,
Monday still exists.
There's no Friday. I think it goes Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
Thursday
is the new Sunday.
No, Friday still exists because it's like the end of the content week. Okay, we don't have a show for a couple days. Like, don't have to do this, don't have to do that. There still is that. It's just Friday is only like from 4 o'clock to like 7. There's that little bit of Friday feel, and then it just goes right into Sunday.
The thing is, like, every day of the week feels like a Friday after 5 o'clock because you want to have a couple drinks, and then a couple drinks turns into 3 or 4 drinks. Alcohol consumption is going way up in America.
Yes. Like,
people are talking about having Corona babies. They're going to be Corona livers in about 3 or 4 months.
Yeah. This is, so yeah, we're here. I don't know what else you guys got. Like, what else we had an early take quake of the year with Jemele Hill. That was, that's making waves.
What'd you say?
Well, Robert Kraft went to China and got a bunch of masks for the hospitals, I think, in Massachusetts. And Jemele Hill, hold on, I'm going to pull it up just because I don't want to misquote anyone.
He flew, like, the Patriots plane to China, like, had to clear, like, all these restrictions, like, really went out above and beyond to, like, help the people of Massachusetts.
1.7 million N95 masks, and the N95 masks are actually the masks that they use in hospitals that are very much needed. We're not talking about, like, the masks that you see everyone wearing when they're walking down the street. She quote tweeted and said, "This is where I remind people that Robert Kraft is friends with Donald Trump and gave to his campaign. It's incredible for the Kraft family is doing this, but hope they understand their money helped empower their friend, quote unquote friend." I feel like we're at the point in time where it's like any good deed that can help the greater cause here, let's just let it be a good deed.
Well, it's especially egregious considering that he could go right down the street to Chris Sale and be like, "Hey, Chris, can you cut up some more MLB jerseys to use as masks?" And then that'll probably outfit like a couple million people right there. Laramie Tunsil, by the way, I said I wasn't going to make a joke about it, but you've twisted my arm.
You can't help yourself. Yep.
Laramie, he is donating like 50,000 masks too. And it's like, come on. The guy, I saw you on draft night. I saw what kind of masks you're going to donate. But still, good for you. I saw Ford is doing a good thing. Ford's converting their assembly line into making some ventilators. Do you think that if you're in the hospital, let's say you're in the hospital and you're like a diehard Chevy racing fan, you've got like the Ford Calvin pissing on the Ford logo on the back of your Silverado, and they hook you up to a Ford ventilator, do you say no thank you?
I think you probably have your wife or girlfriend or probably ex-wife, more spot on, put some duct tape over it so you can't see it. Be like, here, just get that. I'm going to let it save my life, but I'm not going to be happy about it.
Are you just like put a strip of electric tape and you write sucks on it? So it says Ford sucks on the ventilator.
Or maybe they're selling actual like Calvin pissing stickers that you can just like insert into any ventilator that you need to.
Yeah. There was another good piece of news that came out today, or it was more just a good visual. It was Andy Reid chopping up some film in quarantine. Mm-hmm. Did you see that picture?
Yep. In his shorts, feeling good.
In his shorts, always. He's got a camel toe on his knee. That's how long ago Andy Reid had ACL surgery. It was back probably in the 70s where they just took an axe to it and they said, okay, you're good to go.
The only thing that bummed me out about that picture is I didn't need the visual of Andy Reid sitting there without a like industrial size Purell bottle. I just figure everything in Andy's house, it's like Pee Wee Herman's house. Everything's oversized for him. So I was a little upset about that. I wanted like a 10-gallon Purell bottle that he's pumping away at all day while he's cutting up film.
A bird bath filled with hand sanitizer would be a great visual. Yes. I did notice that he's got two packs of gum on his desk. And what that told me was this is a man that has not been allowed by his wife to go to the grocery store and buy dip, when he's got like everything that he can possibly chew just strewn across his desk.
Listen, as someone who's living it right now, it's there's usually not a lot of dip in the house, so it's definitely become a different beast altogether.
Being so, quarantined. What's your vice now? I'm actually a little bit concerned about you because you can't, late in the night.
Yeah,
you can't gamble.
Yeah, I just
you weren't
dip
much
late
of a drinker
night.
To begin with. You can't dip during the day.
The horses are still running.
What do you do?
The horses are still running. I watch the horses, but yeah, I just kind of exist. I've been a lot of dad, a lot of being a dad, which is you know, it's a thing. It's fun. It's fun.
Although my son, I actually very much enjoy it, though,
that you're not going to get any credit for like. Being around so much because he's so young, he's not going to remember it.
No, but I'll always be like, I was around the whole time when we were fighting coronavirus. I was on the front lines. No, but it actually is crazy. There's like just watching a little kid grow day to day is fucking mind blowing. And he also opened up my Xbox the other day and flinged my NCAA 14 game, and it's all scratched up. So I'm really living it. Like, it's good. We're making memories.
Speaking of NCAA 14, we started a Part of My Take Twitch channel too, which is basically all I've been doing is playing video games.
Dude, this quarantine though, for real, like it is crazy. And I know this is getting too much into dad life, but it's crazy to watch a child, like the progression they make. When quarantine started, he was not crawling. Now he's pretty much like in college.
He's just been watching his dad and trying to be like Papa.
Yeah, he's just been doing the whole thing, which, by the way, we have to remind me, when we get to King of Kong's Fistful of Quarters, all-time scene when Steve Wiebe's son is like, come wipe my ass. And he's like, dude, I'm about to break the record. And I was like, yo, I know exactly how he's feeling right now. Uh-huh. That's going to be me in 5 years when I'm watching some game in overtime being like, holy shit, I have to get this underdog home. And he's like, come wipe my ass, Dad. It's like, sorry, can't do it.
That sounds like it's probably both entertaining and also frustrating at times, being the father of an infant going through this.
It's one of those things, and I'm sure I'm speaking to some of our audience here. I think there are two Americas right now, the quarantined America without children and the quarantined America with children. The quarantined America without children, it's essentially like you're back in college, you just can't go out. And the quarantined life with children is like, holy shit, doing like juggling a job and a child all day long is a fucking lot of work.
Right. I'd say it, not so much like college. It's more like being in white collar prison for me right now, which is not if you're going to be in a prison, white collar jail is the way to go. So
it's like being grounded in a suburban house, like a nice suburb. It's just like you're grounded, but like you can do whatever you have in your bedroom.
Yeah. Right. It's like being grounded in a nice finished basement.
Yes.
You can eat all the candy you want. You can watch TV, but you still can't go up.
Yeah, you can maybe sneak over to your friend's house, but if you get caught, you're in a lot of shit.
So shout out from my perspective, shout out to all the dads and moms out there who are trying to juggle work and being a parent. It's fucking hard. It's fucking hard. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty
from
exhausted.
My perspective, shout out to everyone whose internal clock is all kinds of messed up right now, and you're waking up at 10 a.m., 11 a.m., can't go to bed until like 1-2 in the morning. It's tough. It's rough out here for us too.
Yeah. I'm sleeping too much. I actually think about, and maybe not you as much PFT, because I think you might get up a little bit earlier, but I think about Hank when I'm on my second cup of coffee at like 8:15 in the morning. And I'm like, that motherfucker has still got like 3 hours of sleep left.
Yeah. 3 hours till the yawns kick in.
Yeah. Like 9:30, 10 o'clock is when the alarms start going off. And I honestly, I wake up, I see that nothing is going on. I'm like, all right, I'm gonna go back to sleep. Like, who cares?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What's going to happen is there. So once we get to the other side of this, let's say fall rolls around, we might not have a vaccine for it yet. Right. So team sports might be tricky, but I don't know if you saw this yesterday, they canceled the British Open, the Open. The Open Championship, one of the great times every year where guys who root for the course like us get to sit down and just watch a bunch of European golfers hit into 7 foot tall weeds, right? They canceled it because obviously is an issue right now. Can't get on commercial flights or anything like that. Can't have a gallery. It's tough to have like a bunch of production people set up to videotape it and broadcast it. Why don't they do it like it was back in the pre-Titanic ages or back in like pre-World War II when people had to take steamships overseas and then there was no broadcasting at all? There's no media there. Why don't you just have it be a golf tournament? Everyone keeps score, and you have – I was saying just have, like, Norm MacDonald on Twitter walking around the course posting updates.
Okay, so let me make sure that I'm just going to deconstruct this idea here. You want to have a sporting event where none of us get to watch it, but before none of us get to watch it, you're going to make everyone get on a cruise ship.
No, no, no. I'm saying the players, the athletes themselves.
Yeah, no, themselves, I know. They're going to get on a ship.
I'm pretty sure Blake would not ride on Royal Caribbean. I'm pretty sure Blake
Koepka would. I understand. But you're going to get on a ship.
What you said on Wednesday, Big Cat.
What?
We can't be shamed. We're not shaming.
No, we're not shaming ideas. Well, I would like to. I'll shame this idea because I want to watch. I won't shame any idea that gets me to watch sports. I'll shame ideas that don't get me to watch sports.
You could gamble on it, and you could have Norm MacDonald giving you updates. Maybe he'd have a Periscope going.
Listen. I've gambled on a lot of things that I haven't been able to watch. And if you gamble on something that you aren't able to watch, like, you know, you bet on a game that's like, Philippines basketball or basketball in like, I think there's a league in Nicaragua or something. If you lose and you can't watch it, you just assume that you got like taken. And that it never even happened, and they just rigged it and stole your money. So everyone would just be very upset, myself included, because of course I'd bet it. And then when my stupid bet lost, I'd be like, wait, this is rigged. This never actually even happened.
Okay, they could do one camera per hole.
I'm fine. If they did a Periscope of a golf tournament, now you're talking. Now I'm in. But seeing, you know, having a golf tournament just be played and not be able to watch it doesn't help me in my need to just watch a ball move around on my screen.
Okay, every caddy they have their phone out and they just do a Periscope.
How about this? Every caddy wears like a police officer body cam.
Hmm. And then they accidentally turn it off right before their guy hits it out of bounds. I know how that goes.
Right. Yeah, I mean, listen, there's going to need to be some innovation because I don't know how they're going to get team sports going in the speed that we need it to go. Because April, I think we all agree, April is a wash. I think collectively as a country, we're like, April just didn't exist. We're just going to put our heads down and get through April. If we get to May and they're like, hey, guess what? Nothing's changing. That's when shit's going to get bad.
We sleep in May. But I think that we should consider doing something like my idea for at least the U.S. Open.
Just having it be played with nothing?
With no fans, yeah.
Fans is fine, but you need the cameras.
Type of camera. You can have you can have one camera. You can just use – here's – you just take the fucking Goodyear blimp and you just use that camera the entire time.
That's fine.
And then
fine.
You have to say like computer enhance and zoom in on whichever golfer you want.
I'm all for that. I we need a camera. Your original idea with no camera doesn't work for me because I'm convinced we're not going to have fans for a year. So the no fans ship has really sailed. Just give me a camera with a ball on the screen moving back and forth.
Have a drone that just hovers behind each golfer with a camera that has like a GPS tracker on the ball. This isn't difficult. If the USGA wants to talk to me, I'll take their call right now. We'll hammer this out on the back of a napkin and there will be a fucking US Open that we can watch.
Yeah, I'm down for it. Although, have they all been canceled? Have they been pushed, suspended, or canceled?
The Open is, the US Open, they have not made an official announcement. The British Open, they did say that they're going
to
cancel.
If they just, man, this is the problem is they need to stop canceling. They just need to give, like we were talking about on Wednesday, the hope. I lost the hope. I'm trying to get the hope back. But someone needs to create like a, hey, if everyone can just hold out, we're going to put every single tournament like every other week in July and August. And every single sporting event, like we're going to play the NBA, like it will be nonstop wall-to-wall sports for 2 months. I could handle that. Just being like, hey, once we get there, it's going to be like the land before time when they come out and they see the fucking beautiful like whole world out there. That's what we need in July and August.
I actually saw an idea. I think Matt Jones, a good friend of the program, tweeted this out, that it's looking more and more like the springtime in college sports is going to be both football and basketball next year. That would be crazy.
That would be nuts. That would be fucking nuts. You know what's
that'd be a crack cocaine of a sports season.
The only sport
I'm not gonna make it till then.
I am.
Like, I'm not going to.
Well, I know. We just keep like passing the baton of who's the most negative. I think that's actually, I know that people want to listen to this show and have an escape, but I think there also needs to be the reality where every single show we have, someone's the designated downer. Because that's like, if we don't do that, then we're just not realistic. And I think there's something to be said for the overly optimistic people who are, it's the just the flu people who think that this is all going to pass in like 2 seconds. I hate those people as much as I hate myself from Wednesday's show being like, cancel everything.
Well, here's some coronavirus positivity. Tommy Lasorda still alive.
Corona positivity of the night.
Also, shout out to Cabrona bro, Hank Lockwood.
Mm-hmm.
Representing online today, getting into some arguments, some hot ones.
Maybe yeah, that's
I got bored and I got mad.
Maybe you're that's the new COVID-19. Maybe that's the new sport of America's pastime. Just watching Clay Travis move the goalposts all summer long. That's our new pastime.
It is. I mean, if we can come up with some sort of metric to track how far he's moving them, then gamble on that. That would be amazing.
If you're on Gamecast right now watching it, you're like, wait, how the fuck did they just how do they have 80 more yards to go and they just had a 60-yard completion? What the fuck is going on?
Oh, the goalpost probability is going from 99 to 1% back and forth. The chart's literally off the chart. A little perspective though. So it's good to have kind of a sobering mindset to look at this through analytics. And fortunately, in this day and age, we have one of those type of people named Darren Revelle, who said the biggest issue facing many businesses right now is that they never modeled a scenario of zero revenue with no guarantee of a timeline for future revenue. Mm. So that is talking business with part of my take. The big problem out there right now is when you go into business, you don't do so figuring how can my business make money when we're not making money.
Right. Like when you're making no money, but you need to be making money. That's a problem.
The new stonks meme needs to just be Darren's avatar.
Speaking of making money, everyone please support our advertisers who are staying with us, because podcasts, like we said, we're hit too. It's a recession, but if you listen and enjoy this show and you see, hear an ad that you, you know, it tickles your fancy, don't be afraid to use one of our promo codes.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
All right, should we do some Firefest before we get to Joe Buck and Oliver Hudson?
Yeah, let's Big Cat. The only other sports notable thing that I saw is Melo Ball actually pulling a big baller move.
Mm-hmm. He bought his New Zealand team or his Australian team, so that is a big baller move. But then wouldn't that make us big ballers?
Oh, yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, ballers, I guess it would.
He also did it in like a way where he was like, I just want to part of his dad's league, like obviously he got shut down. He's like, I've been a part of leagues that got shut down. Like, I want to make sure all my people are like protected, which is for as young a kid as he is, as big a baller move as I've seen.
I can't wait to see LaMelo Ball in the especially in this NBA. Economy. He's going to be jacking like shots from half court, and people are going to be like, "Are you serious, man?"
But with Trae Young though, it's like
yeah,
going to be Trae Young. Like, yeah, he's going to be like Trae Young.
Now, maybe that, LaMelo the way bought he this team
like 4 years ago when he was doing it in high school and it was from half court. People were like, this is outrageous. But now I feel like it's much more accepted.
Yeah, he got 10,000 hours worth of shooting wild half court shots in, and he's become a master at it. Just practice makes perfect. But I think that like buying the Australian team might be really, really good for him, especially considering, you know, how his dad tends to overshadow things. Just send LaVar down there to be a coach or just put him on the roster.
Yeah. Half court shots, by the way. I was watching Hoosiers. I've been watching Hoosiers all week. And I was wondering.
How long does it take to watch Hoosiers?
Well, we're watching it during radio. So we watch it at 20-minute times. And we actually don't even listen to it. We just have Brandon Walker narrate it. But anyway, I threw this out there. What if Steph Curry was in 1951 Indiana, do you think they would burn him as a witch?
Yeah, for sure. Kyrie too.
He would never see the court. He would never see the court. He would never see the court.
They would probably actually just burn Kyrie for his weird beliefs before he even stepped foot on a basketball court.
Although his beliefs might have been like cool in Indiana in 1951, be like, hey, the world's actually still flat.
Yeah, maybe he would have been a genius, though. Maybe he would have been like, you know, there's this thing that I've thought of called evolution. And they'd be like, which? And then they'd burn him.
Question everything. Mm-hmm. All right, what do we got for Firefest? Hank, why don't you start?
My Firefest is kind of a two for one. But PFT, like you were talking about, your local businessman still being open the other day. My guy is not. I don't know what I'm going to do. But also, like, piggybacking off of that is
I got
like,
you.
Smoking $6 a gram. In the way that, like, we're just – I'm just sitting in my, like, 700-square-foot apartment all day, all night, every day, every night. Like, the act of smoking, like, isn't even fun anymore. Like, it just lost its luster. Not even that. Like, not even, like – it used to be, like, you know, you go to work and you come home and it's, like, smoke a bowl, whatever.
What I'm saying.
Like, everything. There is no, like, I'm going to do this and then I'm going to do this. It's just, like, every day.
It ruins nothing. Doing nothing is not fun anymore because you have to do something to do nothing, and we do nothing, so now nothing is nothing.
Right. It's not like my tolerance is so high that I just have hit a limit. It's just, like, it's not fun anymore.
Yeah.
I think I got you. I think what you need to start doing is just build a new piece to smoke out of like different ingredients every time you smoke. So like smoke out of an apple, and then later in the day get like a Mountain Dew bottle and a ballpoint pen and some aluminum foil.
You should. Here's what you should do, Hank. Similar to that, but you should just go back in like your smoking history. Start at like the beginning and then just live your life like you were, you know, every single piece you had your entire life. Like start with a can,
go in the woods every day.
Yes.
Yeah. Open up your own browsing history of smoking stuff. And then eventually, you know, you'll start to Google new ways to smoke and you'll find out ways that you haven't even thought of. And you'll come out of this thing stronger than before.
Well, but back to the first part of it is that like my building, like there's a doorman and they're not letting deliveries come inside. Like they're not letting people in the building. So I don't even know how, like, I think I'm just going to stop smoking because I don't know how I'm going to get it.
What?
Probably not, but.
I don't think that's going to happen.
Nice try, though. All right, what do you, Hank,
let's take this offline.
What's your Firefest, PFT?
My Firefest is I stop pooping.
Okay, that's, I didn't need to know that.
No, you do because I don't know what's going on.
Like so smoking has lost its luster for me. Pooping has lost its luster for you.
No, I just – my body, I guess, is adapting to the quarantine. So maybe my body knows that it's in crisis mode. Yeah, I'm eating. Maybe my body knows to just, like, step it up in terms of absorbing all the proper nutrients. Maybe my body understands that there is a toilet paper shortage.
Did you stop drinking coffee?
No, I'm drinking more coffee. I'm having some right now.
What about when you're fucking busting out your arm workout on your Peloton? Does that not make you like? Does that not get the adrenaline going?
I don't do the arm part of the Peloton, big cat.
What do you mean?
Straight legs, high impact interval training, Tabata.
Aren't all those races arms and legs though?
Some of them have arm sections in them, but most people don't do the arm section. Anyways, the arm weight's only like 2 pounds.
Wait, but so do you skip the arm weight?
I actually poop more than 2 pounds at a time normally. So
wait. But do you skip the arm workout when you're supposed to be doing it?
No, it always says optional on there.
Oh, well, then you got to do it, though. Is Booger doing it?
No, Booger definitely doesn't do it.
I bet you Booger crushes those
arm workouts. He's publicly said that he does not do the arm workout.
Interesting.
Yeah, so okay. No, the weird thing is just like, I don't know. You know how like women get into a relationship with the tides and the moon with their periods and stuff? That's how my butt is acting just with the supply chain stock at my local grocery store. Like,
I mean, are you scared?
Understands that there's no toilet paper.
How scared are you? Like, I'd be terrified for my first poop.
Yeah, it's gonna hurt.
Excited.
It's gonna hurt.
So I pooped yesterday morning, but that was the first time in like 3 days, 2.5 days, and it kind of hurt. And then today, I sat down for a while, just hoping, just like thinking, hey, if I'm in the room, just something
boredom, happened. Yeah. I do that too. I mean, that's part of my day. It's just like, let's go to the bathroom.
And now I'm mad at Leroy because I let him out 3 times a day and he craps every single time. Maybe I should start eating dog food.
There you go.
Makes Leroy poop all the time.
Yeah. All right. My Firefest is I bought a trumpet. I've been playing the trumpet during the Cat Cave Derby. Tonight was the first night that my neighbor banged on the wall and was like, shut the hell up. So I think that that's one of those situations where I was probably in the wrong, screaming at toy horses as they go around a track and blasting a trumpet. But still, that kind of feels intrusive. Like, the people want to hear me try to play the trumpet. So now I've gotten that robbed from me. What else can I do?
That's a moment where if you're Big Cat's neighbor and, like, everything just gets louder and louder over the course of 2 weeks and then a trumpet kicks in.
Yeah.
You're like, you got to be fucking kidding me.
But here's the thing. It's only from 6:57 to, like, 7:07. So I think I'm going to slide a note under her door and be like, hey, 10 minutes a day, I run an illegal toy horse track. You're just going to have to deal with those 10 minutes.
No, you gotta spin it all until, like, it's for Corona relief. And then
that's true. Mental health.
Yeah.
Trumpet is my mental health. It's my support animal.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Okay. It turns out the trumpet's really hard to play. Didn't know.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Why didn't you get a bugle?
It's only three buttons, I thought.
Bugle.
Blow and there's three buttons, right?
Bugle wasn't going to get here till, like, late May. I don't know if you've checked out Amazon shipping times, but it's a fucking wild scene.
No, I haven't talked to my bugle guy in a while. But, Hank, the three valves on the trumpet, it's not like a trumpet only plays three notes. Those are just used to control a variety of the notes they play. Yeah, there you go, Big Cat. Big Cat, let's hear a note.
Three buttons.
Let's hear it. There you go. That sounds great.
As loud as I'm going to play it.
Regular Wynton Marsalis over there.
Yeah. Louis Armstrong, baby. All right, let's get to our interview with Joe Buck and Oliver Hudson. Before we do that,
hey guys, it's Big Cat, and Fight Week is here. Rough and Rowdy 24 invades Clarksburg, West Virginia this Friday night, April 19th at 8 p.m. Eastern. For the first time since Rough and Rowdy 1, every single fight will be a brand new brawler, and we found the wildest hillbillies the holler has to offer. Order now to enjoy 20 amateur matchups with no headgear, plus our live ring girl contest after the final bell. These country roads are being paved with blood and grit and balls. Join me and Dave on the call for Rough and Rowdy 24 tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern. Witness all the chaos with pay-per-view replay available all weekend long on buyrnr.com. That's buyrnr.com.
Okay, here they are, Joe Buck and Oliver Hudson. Okay, we now welcome on our good friend Joe Buck and his new co-host, Oliver Hudson, because they have a new podcast. It is called Daddy Issues. The first episode was out yesterday, so go find it. Go listen to it. Joe has decided he loves us so much, he's going to enter our world. And Joe, before we start, my first question is actually for Oliver. Daddy Issues...
Yeah.
We know Joe's daddy issues. His daddy issue is his dad was super famous and he was basically born on third, thought he hit a triple, nepotism, got like all his success due to his dad. That's his daddy issue. Yeah. What's your daddy issue, Oliver?
Well, you just explained mine as well in a strict way. I think this is why we're pretty much we're doing this. But I have different daddy issues, I would say. My dad around until I was around 11 or 12. And then he kind of left the picture, which of course has informed every fucking thing in my life, whether it be relationships, career, self-esteem, all the bad shit. You know what I mean? So that is my daddy issue. As far as the nepotism goes, I grew up in a family of famous people. Okay. So, you know, I am in the proverbial shadow. I might put myself there. I understand that. That's my own problem. If we want to go into a psychology session, we can. But I'm always trying to sort of, you know, make mommy and daddy proud. I'm not sure I have yet.
Can you name drop for us? Name drop for us for people who might not know.
My mother is Goldie Hawn.
No big deal.
My stepdad, who I call Pa, because he raised me, you know, is Kurt Russell.
Ever heard of him?
Uh-huh. Yeah. And my sister is this floozy named Kate Hudson.
Whew. Okay. Okay.
And then, of course, I've got my little brother who played professional hockey himself. His name is Wyatt Russell. And he got hurt in Holland, in Germany, and playing hockey. His groin blew out. And basically, he came back home and said, I want to be an actor. And within months, he's got two movies at Sundance. And, you know, everything's fucking great. And, you know, I've been
I've been doing great. I'm doing good, but you know, I've a little bit of a different path than everyone.
You got a
else.
Podcast going. You're basically a king right now. Yeah. So, do you guys have any advice that you'd like to ask us for? Like, now you're stepping into our world. Like, Joe, we have never, out of respect for you, we have never gotten into, you know, the major market, major network play-by-play game, even though we've had many offers. Right. But you don't seem to feel that same way about us. So what can we help you with as you're becoming a podcaster?
Well, what I don't understand is that you give these podcasts away for free.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's how you hook them. It's like drugs.
Mm-hmm.
So the gateway is you get to click on a little icon. Everybody gets into this thing for free. And then somehow you guys make money and some great big wig at the top of the food chain sells a thing for hundreds of millions of dollars
that he has.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty much.
That doesn't make sense.
Well, okay. So let me explain to you from our perspective. It's kind of like when we stream your football and baseball games on the internet for free and don't pay a cable bill. That's kind of like the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. All right. Well, I like being on this side of it then.
Yeah.
And I like living in your wake. I mean, we all know, look, when Oliver and I decided to go into this whole thing, I said there's really one place where we have to go, and that is my friends at Pardon My Take, because we have had a great relationship. We tend to fuck around quite a bit. However, wherever I go, I get more comments on being on your podcast than anything I do. Super Bowl, World Series, whatever. And that's mind-blowing to me. And good on you. And we can only hope to be one-third as brilliant as
I do. And I think that you understood how you can be successful outside of the world that you're in. And you want to monetize that. You know what I mean? These are tough times for Joe. Mm-hmm. I don't think, you know, these are tough times for Joe. And I'll just speak about Joe for a second, because I think a lot of people, well, most people know Joe in the booth in usually a blue suit with some weird tie that's okay. Makeup is decent. Half the time he has a beard, half the time he doesn't. You know, his hair, depending on what time of year it is, looks good.
Right. And,
but no one knows who Joe Buck really is. You know, I've been friends with him for a long time now. Golf introduced us and we got really tight. And I think this is a fun way for people that, and you guys know who Joe is, to experience Joe outside of just him in a booth. You know, the guy's got issues. The guy has major insecurities. And I think it's time that people know who he really is.
Major insecurities.
One of the biggest compliments that we get is you guys made Joe Buck likable. Like, like it's a really huge accomplishment for us. But here's the thing. I actually think that it is because Joe, when he talks to us, we are so unlikable that it makes Joe look good in the process. So we're taking over. We're becoming the biggest asshole on set, which you're not used to. And so when they see you in comparison to us, they're like, oh, Joe's not as bad as those two other chuckle fucks.
So it's like basically what you're saying is it's like the whoever it is that follows Charles Manson into the parole board hearing, they're obviously going to look a hell of a lot better than whoever just walked out. Like if I was in prison and I had murdered hundreds of people, I'd say, hey, what time is Manson's appointment to talk to the parole board? I want to go after him.
Yep. Yeah. So you'd be fine.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Okay, good. Well, it's good for me to put a definition to it and to understand it better because it is kind of mind-blowing for me.
Yeah, so Oliver, has he called you Troy yet?
No, we're working on that. Yeah. We're working on that.
I have a question for both of you. It's a little game we play called You Have to Tell the Truth No Matter What.
Okay.
I'll start with you, Oliver. Yeah. What's your favorite Kate Hudson movie?
Almost Famous.
Yeah, same. That same as me. And Joe, how much money did ESPN offer you to be the Monday Night Football host?
$28 million.
What? Can we report that?
Yes, go with that. Go with that, because that's the number I'm going to negotiate off next time around.
I want to know if Joe is, if there's any jealousy about that Tony Romo money or not.
Yeah. Good question, Oliver.
On my part, absolutely 1,000,000% zero. Now, maybe for other
analysts, 1,000,000% zero. I'm trying to figure out what that.
I have
are you saying
none.
You're 1,000,000% jealous?
I have no. Yeah, I have no animosity, jealousy, anything. I'm happy for him, and he doesn't do what I do. So, you know, I wonder about others in this business trying to follow that model. To me, Romo was in the absolute perfect place at the perfect time with two networks that were dying to either keep him or get him. And it just came up at the right time for him, and he cashed in. So good for him. So, no, I have no jealousy toward that at all.
Okay, so let's flip it. Do you think that Troy has any jealousy towards
Romo?
You not being Jim Nance setting up Troy to make $17 million a year.
Oh, that's a great question.
Yeah.
That there could be potential jealousy and animosity and I guess pure hatred on his mm-hmm. part toward me going forward because I have failed him. Unlike Jim Nance with Tony Romo. So I promise to be more Nance-like if he promises to be more Romo-like going forward.
I like that. So actually what you should just do is go out to dinner with some ESPN executives and just make sure that the paparazzi's there. I'm sure you probably have paparazzi following you around anyways. Mm-hmm. But call ahead and let them know where you're going to be.
Oh,
just
yeah.
have your picture taken walking out of
By
dinner.
By the way, the paparazzi scene in St. Louis is massive.
Massive.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Massive.
It's a guy with a disposable camera and a creepy man in a trench coat with a Polaroid.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yes.
It's you.
Joe, we haven't talked to you since Super Bowl.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Hit me with it.
Yeah. I mean,
I thought that you did a great job in the second quarter.
Well, no, you did a fine job. Uh-huh. You just blatantly made up a nickname for playoff Damian that no one in America ever thought was real and thought you could just like say it and we'd be like, oh yeah, his name's definitely Playoff Damian.
What? Okay. Well then you're hanging yourself here. You're hanging yourself here because you want me to say Yabo.
Yeah.
There's you want me to throw that in and just kind of make that fit. If there's ever any time that I can make that happen, I'll think back to this time when Playoff Damian was scoring touchdown after touchdown in the playoffs. 6 playoff games, 11 touchdowns, 85 regular season games, 22 touchdowns. And I read it in the clips leading into the game. So if I made it up, I guess somebody else made it up before me.
Someone definitely was like, yo, what, how can we fuck with Joe Buck?
The fact that you still – no, don't let him pass the buck on this one because you still have all those stats about Playoff Damian buried in your head because you did so much research going into it while you were coming up with the nickname.
No, wrong. I did so much research. I don't even remember who won the game. I did so much research leading into this interview that I knew you guys were going to hit because I listened to your podcast and I heard it and I was like, oh, they're, you know, they thought we did a decent job, which is all you can hope for when you broadcast to 100 million people. And then it's like, but Playoff Damian, like I'm trying to sell Danny Dimes t-shirts. It was just a thing and I threw it out there and I throw myself on your mercy for a little bit of leniency in this case.
Denied. Okay. All right. Yeah. Denied that. And we verified it with Chris Jones. We had Chris Jones in studio like 2 weeks after. And we're like, come on. He's like, I don't think anyone's ever called him Playoff Damian. That makes
no
sense.
Okay. So you're saying Chris Jones is up on all the, you know, the clips and everything else that I read going into a game like that. Okay.
I think he spends time with him.
Yeah. And he knows if there was a nickname like Playoff Damian going around the locker room, he would have known and put a stop to it.
I actually suggested that they call him Big Game Dame. And he was like, yeah, that's a way better nickname
or Playoff D.
than Playoff Damian.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I agree with you. But you're assuming then that I made it up and I didn't. I will find the mm-hmm. clip. So help me God.
Okay.
I will find the clip.
I have two things to ask you about the World Series. Number one, why didn't you use my "and the Houston Astros can suck on D's nats" at the end of Game 7?
I think that's pretty self-explanatory. What's your next one?
Okay, my other one is how come you weren't on the ball and alerting America to the fact that the Astros were cheating this whole time?
Mm-hmm. It's on me. It's totally on me. And Oliver and I have talked about this all the time. I should have alerted everybody because – you know, I was clearly in on it somehow, some way.
Mm-hmm.
I'd agree.
You were at the games and you were hearing trash cans being banged. You were probably hobnobbing whistles with Altuve. You love to say the name Altuve.
It just kind of flows. It rolls right off the tongue.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't buy that at all.
I still think you should have known about it. Yeah. The amount of Astros games that you've attended over the course of the last 2 years, you knew something was up and you hid it from America.
I did. And I throw myself at your mercy. I'm sorry to you and America.
Oliver, the next question's for you. I read that you were in the 2005 World Series of Poker and you busted on the first hand. How much did that suck?
It was one of the worst moments of my life, honestly. I mean, it was
not your wait, not the whole. Daddy issues, like
no. This was far worse.
Clearly worse than abandonment.
Oh yeah. Oh, it was a horrifying experience. It's a $10,000 buy-in. I go to Vegas with my girlfriend, who's now my wife at the time. I said, stay asleep. We start at 11. It's going to be a long-ass day. I go to my table, and it says proceed to the featured table, the ESPN table, because it was Daniel Negreanu and Sammy Farha were just paired with me, seated with me. So now I've got my little bag lunch and my fucking stupid sunglasses on that I now regret wearing. And I sit down, first hand, shuffle up and deal. It was a hand I could never get away from if you watch it. I don't want to go through the whole hand. But it was just an impossibility to get away from the hand. But it all got in the middle on the turn, and that was fucking that. And that was it. I mean, it was a horrible, horrible beat. And it was a sad moment for me.
What were your cards for that?
I had pocket tens. The flop was ace, ace, 10. Sammy Farhad, ace, 10. So
that's tough.
Everything was on the flop.
We should rename the double tens. That should have its own name. Like what's Dead Man's Hand is one of them. That should
So I was playing a ton of poker at the time at Comrist and Hustler, and I was like heavily into poker. And then after that, I would go to the casinos and people would call me Pocket Tens. That became sort of my nickname.
That's you.
Oh my God, you're Pocket Tens, Pocket Tens.
That sucks.
They should call that the Patino hand because you bust real fast.
Real fast. wait, Oliver, you have another podcast?
Yeah, man. It's called Sibling Revelry with my sister.
Who's your sister?
Would we know her?
Janet Jackson. Kate Hudson.
Damn, I was looking at it because I was so. This is actually a real question because I was just googling it and I was hoping that you had quit it because one of my favorite things about the podcast boom is everyone gets a podcast and then after like 3 weeks they're like, this actually kind of sucks. I ran out of stories. How are you guys gonna not run out of stories,
dude? We're fucking crushing right now. I just got to say it. It's been an amazing experience.
I think he's talking about you and me not running out of stories.
Yeah, exactly.
So you can take the pin out of your mouth when you do a podcast. That's first step.
The weed pen.
We actually messed up doing that our first episode too. We were both chewing on a hookah, and Hank was like, "Hey, maybe take the pin out."
Okay, fair enough.
Or take a pull, blow it out, and then start talking.
Yes, yes. So wait, so how are you guys going to keep going? Yeah.
Well, look, who the hell knows, man? I mean, I just want to keep talking to Joe. It's a weekly situation, so it's a current show, right? So we're gonna get on the phone as friends and sort of just rap about what happened during that week, and then we're also gonna have guests on as well.
Okay,
to answer your question, if we all know how it works, right? If people subscribe, if the show actually takes off, we can actually sell some ads and it becomes something viable, then we keep going. If it doesn't, then I get to hang out with a friend and talk with one of my best friends.
All right, so let's role play real quick. Why don't you, I'll be Joe and you be Oliver. And actually, no, PFT, you be Oliver. Why don't you start the show in let's say it's like the third week of October, just randomly I picked that date.
Okay, third week of October. Here we go.
Are you Joe?
Yeah, I'm Joe.
I'm you, Oliver.
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, what's up? Welcome back to Caller Daddy Issues. I was going to Clam Town on this broad the other week, and it was awesome. Anyways, Joe, my sister and I were talking the other week. You know my sister, right? You've met her?
Yeah, your podcast.
So my mom, Goldie Hawn, was telling me that I should tee you up for the story on
Listen,
the podcast.
Listen, Oliver, I'm going to stop you right there. I have a World Series game to call tonight. I have an NFL game to call on Sunday. I have a Thursday night game to call on Thursday. And then I have another World Series game to call on Friday. So this podcast is over.
That's cool. I'm available whenever.
And that's how it's going to go.
That's so great.
You guys can use that. You guys can use that. Yeah, you can use it. You can put it in your feed.
Thank you. Well, good. There's our promo.
That's it. No, but I'm gonna. It's a great excuse for me to get away from my wife and kids for a minute because I'm gonna travel. I'm gonna go on the road if we ever fucking play sports again. But I will. I will go to Green Bay. I will go to Philly. I'm going to travel a little bit, you know.
Nice.
So, I love that. So you'll give your kids daddy issues by working on the podcast, course, Daddy Issues.
And you will be Yoko Ono to Joe's John Lennon.
Right.
Yes.
And the booth is basically split up.
Entire career.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I was thinking more of kind of the spooning in bed with the photographers in the room.
Yes.
Week of their lives.
Yeah. That should be our cover art. That would be a great picture.
That would be great.
Have you guys decided who's going to read the ads? Because I feel like, I don't know, a Roman erectile dysfunction swipe ad read Roman coming from Joe Buck. Yeah. That would go for a premium.
Mm-hmm. Can't wait.
By the way, on the podcast Sibling Revelry with my sister, you know, we have to decide on what ads we want to read because she's got like 1,000 businesses and there's conflicts of interest. But I said to her, I said, the one thing that I do want to do, I don't care what you say, is those Roman swipes, because, you know, it's such a great ad to read. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, trying them out. Have you tried those things, by the way?
I haven't.
Never been an issue for me because I don't have sex.
Yeah. Oliver, is that weird though when Kate's like, I got 1,000,000 businesses, I don't know which ads to do, and you're like, I got nothing?
Oh, dude, yeah. That's part of the conversation. That's part of the conversation I have with her. I'm like, Kate, you know, she's been great, by the way, but I'm like, look, we have to read this Sakara ad. Like, I don't care what you say. Like, it has to get done. I don't care if you wear Rothy's or not. We have to fucking read it, you know. So she knows.
Joe, I saw you were going a little stir crazy around the house, and now you're just narrating random tweets, like videos that people send to you.
Saw one today from a very ponderous man sitting by a window, looking out, gazing upon the pastures outside his window, and I'm going to lay something down on that tonight. Yeah, at least it's for charity. I know you're going to give me shit about it, but at least hopefully it will force you somehow, some way to donate to some charity to help people out during this very difficult time in our nation.
Yeah, that's actually, it's tricky because with all this time on our hands, I've found myself getting out-charitied. Just like I get bored, and so I want to do something nice for somebody else. And then at the end of the day, I'm poor and I spend all my money on charities.
Mm-hmm. Well, so this is what, a moment for us to feel sorry for you?
Well, no, that's why I'm doing this interview with you, is because we get paid $75,000 per show. So I got to get back into the studio so then I can go spend it all on more charities. But mm-hmm. No, it's nice what you're doing. What's the best clip that anybody sent you so far?
Well, I mean, look, for this audience, I think it's probably a little too G-rated. And obviously I can't get into on my public Twitter doing the kind of thing that, you know, the type of humor that I would typically do with friends. So, you know, whether it's a family clearing out an entire living room worth of furniture and playing two-on-two basketball against one another, or two kids just playing like the best point in tennis in the basement on carpet with like really good shots. And it's amazing what people are doing to try and occupy their time, get out of the house, break up the monotony. And I get to see it all flooding my way. Some of them are ridiculous. Some of them are you know, look at my dog sit on his mat and eat a treat. But most of them are pretty cool and interesting and worthwhile.
What, Joe, are you going stir crazy yet without sports? Or are you, because this is kind of not your busy season. I mean, you have the U.S. Open usually a little later on. You do baseball. But are you, where are you at with, like, we need sports back meter?
I miss sports more to not be able to sit on my couch and watch it. That's where I miss it. You're right. I mean, this is my downtime after the Super Bowl, after playoff Damian did his thing. This is normally the time when I kind of recharge and I'm around the house. Now, I'm not around the house like I am currently, which is nonstop with just under 2-year-old twin boys. But to have all that time and then my daughters are back in town, it, you know, while people are literally fighting for their lives, I think the silver lining for some is at least getting a chance to reconnect and, you know, have a dinner or just see what's going on in people's lives. We all move so fast. That's a small silver lining to what is a national, you know, tragedy at this point.
Yeah.
And Oliver, are you a sports fan yourself?
Yeah. I've been a sports fan for a long time. Been a big Lakers fan. You know, Dodgers, playoff Dodger fan.
Typical LA sports fan. Annoying.
Well, I've been a devout Lakers fan, but other than that, I will say that I'm a playoff baseball fan. I can't watch all the fucking games. I can't do it.
You're
I'm
a playoff
big, golf,
Damian.
Big golf. Yeah. I'm a big golf fan too.
How do you think Joe does with the US Open?
I think he does well, actually. Yeah, no, I think he does a good job. I mean, he's got to sort of put the handcuffs on. It's strange. You know, to hear him sort of more subdued.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think he does fine. It's honestly not that difficult. I mean,
ooh,
you know, you sit in a trailer and, you know, you can read things and you watch TV and just comment on like a you know, putts and, you know, how the yardage is and the wind direction and, mm-hmm. you know, throw a few little things in there here and there and rely on Azinger or whoever next to him is the color guy.
Tossing a fun fact about the person who just won his girlfriend that turns out not to be his girlfriend anymore. It's like easy stuff like that. Actually, Joe, did you notice that they replayed that U.S. Open on Fox like last week? And I watched it at the very end just to hear you talk about Brooks Koepka's girlfriend. And they didn't cut it out. It was wonderful.
No. Well, that one was on. I know the Shinnecock one was on. I did not see that one. I can never live that down. And that's just part of my IMDb page. It's part of my Wikipedia. It's whatever. Who gives
if you
a
go
shit?
Through life without a controversy section in your Wikipedia page, did you really even live?
It's true.
That's true. Yeah. I think if you're on air live for that many hours, at some point you're going to misidentify somebody's girlfriend. I actually was worse, back in 2001, pre-social media, thank God, when I interviewed Tony Womack from Down on the Field and asked him if the woman standing next to him was his mom. And he stopped in the middle of an interview after winning a playoff game and said, "No, man, that's my wife."
Yeah, that's tough. Can I give you guys, like, from a pro that's been in this biz for a while, if you want to get a real pop with your very first episode, you need to have Artie Lang on as your guest.
Yeah.
I actually would love to have Artie Lang on as our guest, first or last or whenever it would happen. Artie and I are good.
Did you, speaking of that show, did you ever, did you party with Paul Rudd after the Super Bowl?
I never saw Rudd for 1 second down there. You guys may have. I never, we texted, we never ran across one another. I got a picture from him. You know, they're obviously Kansas City. His son, Jack, is a huge Chiefs fan and was so excited when they won that he actually had a nosebleed start. He was so emotional about them winning. So that's the picture I have. Never saw him, never partied with him, barely partied at all that entire week.
Oh, so you did party.
Yeah, I mean, you have to kind of do some things, but not much. I saw a PFT at some event for someone, an ESPN thing, wasn't it?
It was at the Darlington Carissa Thompson party.
That's right. Yeah.
And you gave me a hug. You saw me. You came up and you pushed my hand out of the way. And you were like, we're going to hug now. I'm glad that we're at hug level, but I didn't know that I was.
Well, we were.
You were probably high.
Before then. Yeah. Yeah. You had a random nosebleed too at that party. Yeah,
you had a pacifier in your mouth and you were doing a Molly. All right. I got one last.
Oliver right now is sitting back going, you know what? I think I'm going to listen to this podcast going forward.
I like it.
Yeah. Oliver, actually on Wednesday, we had, a week ago, we had Joe's favorite team, the head coach, Craig Berube. So you can listen to that and maybe be like, hey, let's talk Blues.
Do you guys ever have like big movie actors on?
Zac Efron,
Rob Lowe,
Zac Efron,
Adam Sandler.
Did you have Sandler on?
David Spade,
Topher Grace,
David Wallace
from The Office.
Did you give Spade shit, or did you, or were you like, did you?
Oh yeah, we shit in his mouth.
Mm-hmm. Oh good.
Mm-hmm. Good. I have one last question. It's not a question. It's going to be a read a tweet. So it's a tweet for both of you. I have one for you, Joe, one for you, Oliver. Someone tweeted out, I don't understand why people hate Joe Buck so much. Dislike is one thing. Hate is quite another. He's a homegrown talent who's candid as ever, can hold his own in multiple sports with broadcasting, and doesn't mind taking shots at himself. What's to hate? Now, almost all the replies were in agreement, being like, Joe Buck's awesome. So I think why do people hate Joe Buck is actually a myth now. I don't think it's real anymore. I don't think people hate you, except for this one guy who said low skill level and got his job because of systematic nepotism. He's not where he is because of merit, but if you're born with the right birth certificate, credentials, you can pass people with more talent and work ethic in our society, but mostly people dislike him because he's bad.
Yeah, I think that kind of covers it all.
Yeah, I think so too. Oliver, your tweet.
That was actually Big Cat sent that.
Yeah. No, it is crazy though. I think it is a myth. I really do. I think there was a time where people hated you, and now people are like, there's just a myth out there. Like, why do people hate Joe Buck? And everyone's like, no one hates Joe Buck, really.
We've talked about this before. When we started our podcast, right? We are the guy who was editing our sound. He's a huge Dodgers fan. And I said, do you hate Joe Buck? And I said, be straight up. And he said he did. And I said, why? He said, because he seems to always root for the other team. Okay. But then Joe had a great explanation for this. People, you can say it, Joe, but people are watching their regional announcers, their
team announcers. Yeah. I'm the only guy to do National World Series since the advent of social media. So it just is what it is. My dad used to get it. Scully used to get it. But it was a different time. You'd have to sit down, write a letter, and you won at the biggest times. And I felt this way with your aforementioned guest, Berube and the Blues, the team I root for. As great as Doc Emrick is, as great as Kenny Albert is, I wanted the hometown guys that live and die like I do with the Blues fortunes to be calling the action like I've heard all year. And when you hear somebody get excited when the other team scores or hits a home run, like, why are they so excited? I don't hear that all year. So naturally, you think they're rooting for the other team, which is just stupid. It's not true.
Okay, I get it with baseball because I agree with baseball. Baseball, you grind it out with your guys 162 games. But football, I don't think anyone really hates you anymore. I really don't. I think you have – I've told you this, but you have the big game voice that it's very rare, and every time you're announcing a game, it feels important.
Well, thank you. It's taken a long time to get there. And I think a lot of that stuff bleeds over. A Phillies fan is an Eagles fan, a Giants fan is a Yankees fan. It's not like people just live and die with one sport, but yeah, it's part of the shit you have to take to do what I get to do, which is, you know, I wouldn't want to be doing anything else. So I don't really care, but that's why I'm doing a podcast. Why I come on with you? You know, I've talked to other people.
Look, if someone paid me $50 million a year to be hated by everyone, I'd do that too.
Easy.
Easy. Me too.
Yeah, easy. Oliver, your tweet was from Spicy Chicken Queen, November 17th, 2015. She said, Oliver Hudson, I want to suck his dick for 2 hours. Hell yeah. What do you think about that?
That's too
long.
Should
I retweet that?
That's too long. Yeah, that was too long.
You're going to need a lot of Roman. You're going to need a lot of Roman.
Too much
of
I like that. I'll take that.
2050. Wait, what, yeah. Why did I get the tweet that I got and he got that tweet?
It was just random. We just pulled them both up randomly.
Yeah, okay, it was completely random. It's a random tweet generator.
Okay, good.
Joe, I want to get a little intel out of you and then we'll let you guys go. When is sports coming back?
Yeah.
I'm sure you're on the inside of all this decision making.
You know, I honestly, if we can be real for a minute, I don't think anybody has any idea. And I say that because I just talked to my boss at Fox. You know, they're talking about all kinds of scenarios, but it all depends on when the curtain comes up. So when does baseball start? I don't know. Do you aim for the All-Star game and have that be the kickoff? Do you start a little bit before? Do you have to have 80, 81 games to feel like you had somewhat of a real season? You know, what about the NHL, the NBA? You're down to the end and you got the playoffs coming. I literally have no idea. From people who are running these sports and networks, then I think the answer is nobody has any idea when this stuff's going to start back up.
Shit. Damn it.
Sorry to tell you that.
We're going to have football season though, right?
I would think so.
Just say yes.
Yeah.
Yes, we will have football
season. Joe Buck has reported that he heard from Fox Bigwigs.
I have definitively reported we will have football season.
There we go.
I love it. I feel better.
Do you? Feel comforted?
No,
way
not
better.
Really.
Way better.
Are you guys ever going to come on our air and talk about your daddy issues?
Nope. I mean, I like my dad.
I'll tell you my daddy issue right now. It's opening day.
Mm-hmm.
And true. So we recorded this last Thursday night. Opening day, I think it was in fourth or fifth grade. My dad came to the school. He brought my glove. He brought my Baltimore Orioles hat. And he pulled me out of class and he said, we're going to go to opening day. They announced it over the loudspeaker. So my whole class saw me like get up to leave. My dad puts me in the van. We start driving out of the school. He turns around and he says, April Fools, and drops me back off at the school,
holy
at the front
shit,
door and sends me back to class. And everyone's like, yo, I thought you were going to again. I was like, no, my dad just punked me.
Yeah.
That's worse than my dad leaving when I was 12.
Agreed.
Not worse than the World Series of Poker, though.
No, definitely not. Not the dead man's head. But to my dad's credit, he just called me about like an hour ago and left me a voicemail saying, hey, it's opening day. Just want to apologize again for what I did to you in elementary school. So that's nice. He gives a reason to call every year.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. This is exactly why this podcast is needed in this world. Everybody's got a fucked up story about something that happened that they'll never let go.
Thank you, guys. Joe Buck, Kate Hudson's brother. Go check out Daddy Issues. You can find it everywhere podcasts are, right? I would
That's
assume.
Right. Subscribe. It's
Goldie Hawn's son.
Apple
and Jack Buck's son.
Yeah, Jack Buck's son and Goldie Hawn's son.
Yeah, thank God.
Yes. No, seriously, thank you guys, though. This sounds like an awesome podcast.
You guys are going to be the podcast that people go on when they want to cry.
That's right.
That's right.
All right. Well, thank you guys. Appreciate
thank it. You. I miss you guys.
I miss you.
I miss your hugs, miss Joe.
You.
I was thinking about that. Hey, it's PFT here talking about Peloton. Starting is everything when it comes to fitness. Peloton encourages you to get moving by doing what you can. Peloton helps you start no matter what level you're at. That's why they have instructors who motivate you from day one with thousands of classes from all levels to get you started. I love my Peloton. I'm back on the Buns of Anarchy. I've been back on the bike if you want to join Buns of Anarchy. Wherever you're starting, get moving with a Peloton bike or bike plus rental at www.onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply. The interview is also brought to you by our good friends at Row. Yep, as the novel coronavirus pandemic escalates in the United States, public health officials like Dr. Fauci are encouraging those who are experiencing signs or symptoms of COVID-19, such as coughing, fever, et cetera, to seek medical guidance remotely. Okay, so if you or a loved one are feeling sick, or if you're just feeling worried, there's a way to get help without even leaving your home. So that's why Roe, the parent company behind Roman, is offering free telehealth services for people seeking guidance and information on COVID-19. The service is available free of charge in all 50 states and Washington, D.C. Their free online assessment is going to help to determine if you're at risk. And if it's appropriate, Roe will connect you with a medical provider for a free consultation. They have an assessment that was designed by doctors and infectious disease experts. It's based on guidelines from the CDC
and the WHO, the World Health Organization. So if you visit GetRoman.com/barstool on your phone or on your laptop, you can do a free online assessment or just learn more about it. But if you're worried that you might be experiencing symptoms, go to GetRoman.com/barstool. Start your free assessment today. They will hook you up with a medical care provider if you need one. They're going to check you out. They're going to see if you are at risk. And if they need to refer you to somebody, they will refer you to a medical provider. So if you're worried at all, GetRoman.com/barstool. That's GetRoman.com/barstool.
Okay, let's get some segments. First up, we have a LeBron James update from our preeminent LeBron James reporter, LeBron James. PFT, you have the tweet.
Yes, this is from LeBron James' Twitter account. LeBron James update. Thinking about maybe sitting down and breaking down some of my most memorable games and moments in my career. Maybe IG Live, or just film it and hold on to it for another time. So LeBron James is thinking about maybe doing content at some point. I'm sure he just got drunk last night and saw a commercial for the Michael Jordan documentary and was like, you know what? I think I need to get in the content game because maybe we'll do an 11-part LeBron James documentary.
You know what sucks about this is that I actually would love to see this. Hank, I don't know if you're on the same side. I would love to see this simply because LeBron James actually is like a basketball genius, and I think he has close to a photographic memory. So I would love anytime someone explains like what was going through their head through a big moment, I'm all in. And it hurts me to say it because I already know that LeBron's going to be super annoying during the MJ doc and try to make it all about LeBron. And I don't even think LeBron's in the MJ doc, which is sneaky awesome. But amazing. Yeah, but I would watch this and I would like to hear LeBron like break down his biggest games, biggest plays.
Oh, I would 1,000,000% watch it if he ever made it. But it's very clear that he's doing
it. It would be so slanted.
But hey, what, seeing pro LeBron James being like LeBron James was good at basketball.
Well, in today's day and age, like I feel like back in the day, like it was one thing where like nowadays everyone that's anyone has a production company. Like they do like their own TV show, like their own internet thing. Like it is way more set up for the athletes to be in control of whatever they put out. Whereas Michael Jordan's era, they probably just had a camera rolling and he was like, whatever, a camera's rolling. So it's going to be much better. Whereas LeBron, like Dwayne Wade's documentary, they didn't talk about like the controversial shit and they just made it look like Dwayne Wade was like the greatest ever.
Okay.
And this would be the same thing with LeBron.
So here's what we need to do. LeBron should do this, but he should start with the 8-point game in the finals against the Mavs and explain what was going through his brain then. And then after that, it's okay. He can talk about everything else.
Mm-hmm. So you're just concerned, Hank, that it's going to be propaganda.
I'm not concerned. I know it would be.
Right. Of course.
Also, the NBA was fixed. Like the reason they beat the Celtics in 2010 was because the NBA was fixed anyway. So I know it's all propaganda. All right,
well, just take solace in the fact that when LeBron James says thinking about maybe doing something.
Did you guys see they were showing?
And then
he adds
in maybe later. He's just not going to do it.
They were showing fucking game 7 of the Warriors game, and they ESPN cut out Kyrie Irving's 3-pointer that won the game.
Yes, I did see
that. What shot was that? That didn't happen.
And I hate Kyrie
LeBron
too.
Wait.
That was
LeBron
insane.
James
game 7 of the finals.
The chase down block,
they cut that out.
Yes, I saw that.
He did the block, and then
Cavs
Steph
won.
Curry missed the three exactly. because Kevin exactly. Love played good defense.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, it was actually LeBron playing defense on Steph. Right. They did a green screen remake of it.
Gotcha. Yeah. LeBron definitely will make it slanted about himself if he ever gets around to maybe doing it. But the fact that he was like, maybe I'll just IG live it. You can hear him over the course of this tweet, like talking himself out of doing any of the actual work that would go into like a heavy undertaking like that.
Yes.
Actually, you know what documentary I would absolutely watch? Over the Michael Jordan one, the like 2000 Portland Trailblazers documentary.
The Jailblazers?
Yeah. With like Damon Stoudemire, Rasheed Wallace.
Or the Wizards with Gilbert and Caron, yeah. Whatever. Caron Butler.
They should put out the Jailblazers one on 420 one day after the Michael Jordan one.
That'd be sick. That would be sick. Let's do our Mount Flushmore and then let's do some King of Kong Fistful of Quarters, the most ridiculous documentary that doesn't get talked about enough. Mount Flushmore of animals, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Worst animals.
Okay. Well, no, it's Mount Flushmore of animals.
Yeah, which is the worst.
Yeah, animal. We've been doing that where people have been saying you're just doing Mount Rushmores, but when you say it, like when we did the Mount Flushmore of worst candies, we should have done the best candies.
Yeah, some people got really mad.
So yeah, my brain gets just twisted around. So there's just Mount Flushmore of animals. All right, I got first pick. I'm going to win this draft with first pick because it's the number one most wanted animal in the world right now. Has ruined the entire world. It's bats. Bats fucking suck. Fuck bats. Wow. Fuck bats.
Bats are an integral part of the ecosystem. Bats.
Okay, shut up. Don't do that. Bats took away March Madness. Don't do ecosystems.
Is a pangolin.
Let's all agree, none of that ecosystem bullshit. Bats, fuck you, bats. That's where all these diseases come from. Fuck you, bats. I will never forget that we didn't get March Madness in 2020.
Bats get rid of a lot of our big nuisance insects.
Okay. Bats suck.
Okay. My first pick is going to be mosquitoes. Mosquitoes are awful. They provide no benefit whatsoever. Give people malaria.
They're like the number one ecosystem animal.
No, they are. They only. You know what mosquitoes exist to do? Feed bats. That's it. So you should actually be rooting for mosquitoes to go, because if my mosquitoes go away, then that solves your bat problem too.
Do you guys ever watch mosquitoes? Like, would you ever let it land on you and watch it suck up your blood?
Yes.
No.
Yeah, and then it's just weird. Smash the fuck out of it.
Yeah, wait till it's juicy. I'm not saying I did that because I'd be psychotic, but yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
I will go with the bats of the ground, I like to call them, aka rats.
Many people.
And then I'll go with snakes in general, but specifically just cobra. Like, I had a big snake phobia as a child. I think like Harry Potter 2, the bad guy was a big ass snake. And like for every night for like 2 years, I was scared that a giant snake was going to attack me in my sleep. Mm-hmm. I was just constantly scared of snakes, and I just hate snakes.
Yeah.
But specifically, or what's the Anaconda, the movie, the movie with J-Lo and Ice Cube.
Snakes are scary.
Yeah.
They are. I think with snakes, the only benefit they provide is they give you a nice little red flag. If somebody owns them, you know, to steer clear of that person.
This might sound crazy, but every time I see a boa constrictor, like, fuck something up, it's always like a baby lamb or something.
Or like, a mouse. It's just a giant.
I could take a boa constrictor. I don't think a boa constrictor could take down like a fucking well-fed man.
It depends. If it gets its fucking
I'd fuck it up. I just punch it in its brain over and over. I would a boa constrictor up.
Doesn't have
you could
a
take
brain.
Down a boa constrictor or a python. An anaconda might get you.
Well, anything that bites would kill me. I'm talking about the ones that just constrict. Like, if I just get in a wrestling match,
You get gas in 10 seconds.
No, but it's watching the tape. I've seen the fucking tape. They always go after the fucking smallest animals. They take down kids. They take down fucking baby lambs and little tiny horses. I've never seen an anaconda go after a fucking 230, 40, maybe 50-pound man who can down 5 hot dogs in a night.
What kind of shitty horse gets taken down by an anaconda?
Little baby.
It's got to be the world's dumbest horse.
It's the little baby ones. Any baby animal that like can barely walk, anacondas just go to town on them. They're fucking bullies. They're bullies. Or boa constrictors. They're bullies.
The strangle ones are big time bullies. I do like a nice like puff adder or a cobra. Those are kind of cool and badass.
Can a boa constrictor kill a grown ass man that eats hot dogs?
My second pick is going to be ticks. Again, ticks, no benefit whatsoever. They're parasites. They get like hidden on your dog, so you have to go looking for them. You have to like check yourself after you go for a hike. They give you Lyme disease. Just bad animal all around. Ticks, get out of here.
All right, ticks. All right, I'll go with pigeons. Pigeons fucking suck. And leeches. Leeches suck. I'm coming back around, Hank. You okay?
What do you mean you're coming back around?
I started.
Twice. Oh,
sorry.
It's a snake draft. Hank doesn't like any sort of snake.
I got to stop looking at
that. Pigeons and leeches. Leeches are fucking crazy, man. The fact that you could like jump in a lake and a leech could just hop on you and just start sucking your blood. They're like mosquitoes.
Maybe those could be the cure for corona, though. Wasn't that a thing back in the day?
They would drain your blood with leeches.
They still do some places.
Yeah, I don't think that really works, but yeah, they do. You are right that they do.
I'm not saying it works. I'm saying that many cultures believe that it can work.
Yeah. Did you guys ever go swimming like as kids in lakes where you knew leashes were, but still went anyway? And then like that was the worst. Like
yeah, come scary. Up and just, like, swim fast. Yeah. Outswim the leeches.
Yeah. You ever seen Stand By Me?
Yeah.
When he gets a big leash on his hog.
Okay, so yeah, those are my O'Connell. Two. PFT, your pick.
My next one is going to be a very specific animal: Hitler's dog Blondie.
Oh come on!
What?
That's just a dog. He didn't know.
Yeah, but still, what do you mean you didn't know?
He's a dog. Yeah, every dog's a good dog. There's no bad dogs. Only bad owners.
I'm gonna go on a limb and say that Hitler's dog Blondie is bad because dogs they take on the personalities of their owners. You know that.
Did you abort baby Hitler's dog?
Not if baby Hitler was going to be aborted, then no. If baby Hitler was still intact and I knew that one day it would grow up to raise that dog, yes.
I think if you pick Hitler's dog, you have to pick all dogs.
No, absolutely not.
We're picking all animals. We're picking every single type of these animals.
Mine was a game changer.
So PFT took dogs.
No, I did not.
Like Hitler's he took dog carefree Blondie. Gum. He no, took, you can't, he took
you can't,
dogs.
You can't put me in that box.
Yeah, you took dogs. Make sure that
Nazi Liam, dogs.
Put it all dogs.
Nazi dogs.
No, it's dogs.
I've seen Wolfenstein.
You don't like dogs.
That's just patently false.
That's what you just said. You pick the animal dog.
I'm only going to bring this up because we're talking about Nazis right now, but the fact that all these movies about like the first people on the moon and like, you know, all that stuff, they just excluded the part that Nazis were like all of the people at NASA. Kind of messed up.
Yeah. Wernher von Braun, Operation Paperclip.
Crazy.
So if I were to say I don't like Wernher von Braun, would you say, oh, you don't like all rocket scientists?
No, but we're picking groups of animals. And so like I picked pigeons. I have, what else do I have? Bats. You just did a specific dog. You don't like dogs.
Yeah, he's a bad dog. Blondie
you don't like
bad
dogs.
Dog.
Dogs bad is your dog. Pick.
0 out of 10.
Dogs is your pick. Poop. Hank, your last two.
Hyenas.
Mm.
Like crackhead cheetahs. Like way scarier.
Yes.
And then I will go with just flies, just all around flies.
Like fruit flies and shit?
Just like fruit flies.
Yeah.
Flies in your flies. House. Like anytime, yeah, horse anytime. Flies. There's no good time. You're like, oh, I'm the flies are around. This is lovely.
No, I agree.
That never happens.
I agree. It's usually a corpse or some kind of poop. Yeah
dead fruit. Like you left food out and you're like, fuck.
Ugh. Garbage.
Yeah.
You're never happy to see a fly.
No.
Yeah.
No one has ever said, oh, good, a fly.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
PFT, your last pick?
My last one is going to be roaches. Kind of same situation as with flies. No one's ever happy to see a roach. If there's a roach around, you know that you got some underlying issues that you need to address. Mm-hmm. And the shittiest part about roaches is they're going to be around way longer than us. Like, no matter what, roaches will be here after any sort of apocalypse. I don't think that there's a virus that takes roaches out.
No, roach blood is the best blood. It just stays forever. Mm-hmm. What is a I just looked up something I didn't want to look up. Yeah, I'll pick them actually. I'll just pick maggots for my last one. Ugh. I didn't even Baby know flies. What a maggot looked like. Ugh. Maggots, I thought that's of maggots because of the corpses and people, like there's maggots and corpses. Like that's just gross. The only other one I had that was jellyfish. But jellyfish are – the problem with jellyfish is they suck, but they're also beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know what I mean?
There is somewhere where you're like, oh, this is lovely. Like I'm in a beautiful like Bahamic water. Like this is nice.
And you see them and you're like, wow, that's really cool how they just kind of float and do their whole thing. They're mm-hmm. beautiful.
I had a single hornet on my list. That was the only one that didn't make it.
Is PFT frozen? I think he's frozen.
Oh.
So he definitely chose just dogs. Wait, he's unfrozen. Are you back?
I'm big time back. I heard every word that you said. And I'm not going to – you know what I think this is? I think this is just a little bit of professional jealousy knowing that I've dominated Mount Flushmore season so far. And somebody correctly pointed out that I just picked what I would have picked from a Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, you're worse, terrible at Mount Rushmore.
Which is, we which also is talked you accurate. Out of putting fucking
Carefree gum on, and you changed malt balls to or Whoppers to malt balls. So there's been some selective.
No, I said,
just don't
I
have
said,
the passion.
I
to
said
care.
Malt balls, and then you asked me to change it to Whoppers.
Well, because that's what it is. It's a Whopper.
No, there's a big difference. Yeah,
yeah. And Carefree gum should have been put on there because that was the worst pick of all time.
Still that's what we're going for. That's what we're going for.
Carefree gum candy. All right, should we do King Kong?
What about stingrays?
Stingrays, I think stingrays are similar to jellyfish where they're – yeah, you can pet them. I have the record at the Shedd Aquarium. But I think they're bad but beautiful. Like when they're all fucking going in their little pack, like there's something cool about that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
do they travel in packs?
Yeah, I think so. I think they all just fucking cruised. Maybe those are the smaller stingrays. I don't
That'd
know.
That'd be sick if they were in like a flock of stingrays.
Quick coronavirus negativity thread. I've been watching the like Planet Earth, and every single episode, it's like, oh, look at this cool ass animal. And then David Attenborough comes through. He's like, but in the past 15 years, humans have destroyed this animal's living, and they're all going to die in the next 10 years. Like every single time.
Did you guys see on Twitter there was some tweet that went like not super viral but semi-viral that was like basically, like, do you guys hear the birds out there? Like as soon as the humans stop, you know, invading in their area, the birds come back. It's like, yeah, it's also fucking spring, you idiot. It's like people are going to overthink this and be like, look at how good it is for the environment that we're all stuck in our homes.
Mm-hmm. There's no more pollution outside. That take is actually coming. I can feel it in the wind. Like we're going to get to a point where it's like, actually, this virus is a good thing for humanity.
Yeah, because you can finally feel the wind again.
Right.
The wind is back. I haven't felt the wind in years. All right, should we talk about King of Kong, Fistful of Quarters, one of the greatest documentaries ever created?
Hang on, let me refresh my sun lamp real quick. It's about to go out. This sun lamp has been a real godsend. I've got...
What do you mean refresh? What does that mean?
It's got a timer on it, so
it's
got
to go back up in the sky.
There's such thing as too much sun.
You are literally pulling the sun back up in the sky.
Yeah, I just hit the 30-minute timer on the sun lamp, right? But I feel better. I've got the vitamin D going. It's really refreshing, actually, having just a little star inside my apartment.
Mm-hmm. Okay, King of Kong, Fistful of Quarters. Where do we want to start? I mean, we should probably start with Billy Mitchell. Actually, no, let's start with Steve Wiebe. One of the most sympathetic figures I've ever watched. And so when we were talking about this on Monday, I did watch this when it first came out in 2007, but I forgot a lot about it. I forgot just how sympathetic and like simultaneously that you're rooting for Steve Wiebe, but you're also like, this guy's kind of pathetic, with that one quote where his friend was like, I've never seen anyone cry more then Steve Wiebe has cried out of frustration. And you just feel so bad for him because the whole story about how he was a pitcher and his dad blew out his arm and like he was good at this and that and he had a band that he didn't want anyone to listen to. And you're like, come on, man, like just find something.
He was Nirvana before Nirvana, but he just chose not to be.
Yes.
Like how they
That was a hell of a spin zone by his grandmother or whatever, being like he was like Nirvana, but even more artistic than Kurt Cobain. In fact, he was so artistic that he didn't want anyone to ever hear his songs.
Yeah.
So like,
he's Will Ferrell from Step Brothers.
Yeah. Overall with Steve, yeah, they keep like framing him as a loser, but he also seems like a pretty normal guy. And the biggest knock against him is just like, oh, Steve's never conquered the world. And that weighs really heavily on him. And he's like such a soft-spoken guy. All his buddies are like, yeah, you know, Steve, you know, he's kind of he's had a rough go of it in his life. He's never gotten the Donkey Kong world record. And there are a bunch of clips of him like crying and stuff. But like overall, Steve seems like a pretty average human being. Like he's got a good life by any stretch of the imagination, right?
For sure. Absolutely. But I do think there's something about him when they were talking about like his dexterity and like his ability with his hands. And like, you know, he plays piano, plays the drums, was a great high school pitcher. I think it's like the age old question. Would you rather be completely average, normal, or be like exceptional for a little brief period of time, but not like fully accomplish those goals? That's what he's chasing. Like he has had moments where it feels like he's brushed up against being exceptional, and to have that haunt you must fucking suck. And then you just end up playing Donkey Kong in your garage for hours upon hours to the point where, shout out Steve's wife, by the way, she was actually the real hero of this documentary, who was like, yeah, I kind of wish he wouldn't play Donkey Kong every night and maybe be like around and present, but I also kind of want him to chase his dream.
She was a nice lady, but she also looked like the most stereotypical, like, Karen. Like, if you could describe Karen, the mom, like, that was Steve Wiebe's wife.
Yeah. Oh, she's definitely left, like, a few messages on Twin Galaxies voicemail being like, or she's yelped Twin Galaxies before.
Right.
For sure. I thought that being really, really good on a little kid's drum set was such a good metaphor for being exceptionally talented at Donkey Kong.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Right. He is just so, so good at something that really doesn't mean anything.
So what you're saying is it goes back to the age old question of, I mean, you find it in sports a lot. Would you rather be Chase Daniel or Dan Marino?
Right. Right. And I think Dan Marino would haunt you. Like, that would haunt you. Like, it haunts Dan Marino. Whereas Chase Daniel is probably very at peace with, like, you know what? This was my ability. I maxed it out. And I really couldn't get more out of it. Where, you know, Dan Marino maybe not is the perfect analogy, but Steve Wiebe, it felt like he was always thinking, I never fully maxed out my ability in life.
Right.
One thing that I got to give credit to the filmmakers for, because I didn't realize this, I remember watching it back in the day too, and I didn't like watch it again until the other day, but they also like did an amazing job as making him the sympathetic figure, like Billy the bad guy, Billy's the guy that's on top. And then at the very end, they're just like, but Steve Wiebe ended up winning, and now he holds both records.
Yeah. Well,
but they didn't make it look that way in the documentary. They made it look like Steve Wiebe is this sad guy. But
yeah,
it, like at the very end, it's like Steve Wiebe got exactly what he wanted.
Well, but he didn't, though. He didn't, because
they just didn't show it.
No, but that's the part. That's the part that like killed me with the documentary. And we'll get into Billy Mitchell and his simp army, but he never had the moment in front of his, like, the crowd. He never had that moment where everyone was like, dude, you're the best. It was that fucking loser ref guy. What was his name?
Was it
Wayward Todd or something? Or what was his name? I can't remember his name, but he was the guy who was literally wearing, like, every scene they'd show him, and he was sitting in his house just wearing a ref uniform.
I think his name was Walt.
Walt, oh yeah,
that
Walter,
guy's definitely
Walter
a big,
Day, Walter
big drug
Day,
guy.
Yeah, Walter Day, and like Walter Day was mean to Steve Wiebe, and everyone was rooting against Steve Wiebe, and then Steve Wiebe flies all the way back home to Seattle, and he calls him up, and he's like, "Hey man, sorry, I shouldn't have treated you like that. Like, that's not winning. That's fucking bullshit."
No, he had a letter from Twin Galaxies, and it says, "So they wrote me a letter saying that they're sorry that they treated me like such shit." He's like, I finally won. Like, that was his big crowning achievement. But to be fair, he had about 8 hours at that first thing that he went to where he set the world record in Donkey Kong until Billy Mitchell's video of him beating that record in Donkey Kong showed up. So he had like a brief moment. But I mean, then again, his moment wasn't congratulations, you're the best in the world at this. It's congratulations, you're not a fraud like everyone thought that you might.
Right, right. So, all right. So Billy Mitchell, that moment was – I mean, that moment is one of the greatest moments in documentary history. So Billy Mitchell, let's go back to him for like his backstory. He is the start of it, how he was basically like the first rock star video game guy. They do the Life magazine, Steve Sanders, who lied about the Donkey Kong. And then the unbelievable quote when Billy Mitchell was like, Steve Sanders is the person he is today because he came under the wrath of Billy Mitchell. And then they show this fucking guy, Steve Sanders, who's like brainwashed. He's like, Billy's a rock star. Like, I fucking love Billy. And
it seemed like he was like a successful lawyer that like in the beginning when they show him like, oh, this guy like got away from the video games. Like, and now he lives a normal life. And then he's just like still beholden to Billy. And like he's meeting him in the behind the restaurant being like, oh, Billy's not coming. And then Billy pulls up. It's like he's literally whipped by Billy.
So what do you think it is about Billy Mitchell that has him like have this loyal bootlicking simp army that he has created in the video game world? Is it is it his ties? Is it his hair? Is it his hot sauce entire like empire? Or, and this one I actually kind of think, his wife has big tits. And I think that is the greatest equalizer in like nerd world, where they're like, whoa, Billy, look at the fucking the tits on your wife. And then he just becomes the king of the nerds.
It's a combination of having a hot wife with just a phenomenal rack, the hair, which, I mean, Billy Mitchell has the hair of an early 90s country music star and the personality of a Saudi prince. It's tough to out alpha that because he just has such confidence in everything that he does. It doesn't matter what he's saying. And what you'll find, just most human beings, they want to be dommed. They want to get turned into a sub. Everyone's walking around looking for a strong man to like pull him by the nose and show him, okay, this is what you do. And Billy found, I mean, to his credit, he found a pretty easy demo to just totally dominate, which is to be king of the nerds. But all you have to do is if you say anything with enough confidence and you've trained yourself in like body language and you've got a smoking hot wife that follows you everywhere, you can get nerds to do whatever you say.
And a hot sauce empire. And it's so fascinating watching this documentary and seeing these guys follow Billy around and take everything he says as gospel. And then the one guy that he's had problems with in the past was Mr. Awesome, the guy who actually got hot chicks as well. And Mr. Awesome, one of my favorite quotes, one of the most underrated quotes was Steve Wiebe, who is a passive guy, you know, gets this first moment where he hits this block where he submits his score. He's got the high record. And then all of fucking Billy Mitchell's weird loser minions come running and like delegitimize it. And Mr. Awesome's like, I told Steve Wiebe he's got to fight this. And I de-chumpetized him. And I was like, fuck yes, let's go. And Mr. Awesome, who I don't even know what he does. Like, you know what Mr. Awesome was? He was like a failed like wrestler who just never got like to the WWF but had the whole shtick and everything behind it. And then when he got later on in life, like he had male pattern baldness and he was like, yeah, I was at one point Mr. Awesome.
Well, so the thing about Mr. Awesome is he was a lot like Billy, except he was Billy if he was a professional wrestler. He had the same mentality as Billy. He had the same goals as Billy. They just butted heads because they were too similar. Mr. Awesome was the only person that didn't buy into Billy's shit.
Right.
And you're right. What his quote was, everything would have fell right into place, but he forgot about one thing. He forgot about me convincing Steve Wiebe not to be a chump. Talking him out of chumpetizing himself.
If Mr. Awesome was good at Donkey Kong, he would have taken down Billy Mitchell and history would have been different. But Billy Mitchell, like, I think there was somebody who said that Billy Mitchell got the record so early and basically
it was so high.
And not only was it so high, but he also, like, talk about corruption. The fucking like governing body of video games, Billy Mitchell has his hands all over it. He's like one of the refs. He's looking at the videos with all these guys. So it brings us to that moment. And the worst / best character in this entire documentary, I think we can all agree, is Brian Koo. Brian Koo, like scurrying around the video game place, calling himself a prodigy, calling Billy with updates. And like the best was when he's like, hey, we're about to have a kill screen at Donkey Kong. We're about to have a kill, like going around and tapping everyone on the shoulder, like Donkey Kong kill screen. If you want to check it out,
No one gave a fuck. Like, no, people like, dude, get the fuck away from me, weirdo.
He's the worst. Brian Koo is the worst. I hate him.
Yeah. No, when he was talking about the difference between Steve Wiebe and Billy Mitchell when they first got to Fun Spot, and he had to like throw himself in there. He's like, you know, Billy's the guy that's been around for a while. Steve is like his fierce rival. And I guess a lot of people are calling me, you know, the prodigy. Like, first of all, he was, I'm guessing, 28, 29 years old. You stop being a prodigy after the age of 12. Like, you're no longer a boy. You're no longer a man child or a wunderkind after you reach the age of 11, right? Yes. So he's like, I guess I'm kind of the next one up. People are saying that about me. And he's a good combination of being just a big-time nerd and a spy. So he's like Billy's eyes and ears when Billy can't be somewhere.
And I hate the word bootlicker because we've been called bootlickers, but he truly is a bootlicker. Like, he will walk around in the shadow of Billy Mitchell wherever he goes. He actually reminds me of Philip Seymour Hoffman's character in Boogie Nights, when he's just like following around Dirk Diggler and being like, you're awesome, dude. Like, you fuck so awesome. Can I watch you fuck your wife, Billy? Like, this is fucking sick, dude. I can't imagine what it'd be like to have sex with a woman.
Also very, very Belichickian of Billy Mitchell. Like, the funniest part, the part with Brian that had me dying laughing was when Steve was asking him, he's like, can I watch like the record film? He's like, nope, one time only. Like, that was a one time viewing.
Yeah.
It's like, what?
Oh my God. And like all the time, and Billy being so awkward where he wouldn't show up. Like Steve Wiebe goes to Billy's backyard 10 miles away and Billy won't come and play. And like, we never saw Billy play video games. It was so bizarre to watch this guy because he was so scared of losing his status of the king of the nerds.
You know who else I like was the guy with the weightlifting glove that showed up. I think he became Steve's only friend because he didn't really have any other friends in the community. But yeah, he rolls with his own glove like a mercenary brings their own rifle to war. He's like, this is great. It's a weightlift. First of all, a weightlifting glove being used to play video games is hilarious to begin with. And then how he was like, I discovered that weightlifting gloves don't have fingers. And I was like, dude, you know, you can just take any glove and cut the fingers off yourself.
Him saying like, people don't know this is a weightlifting glove. It's like, yeah, we all do know it is. You guys got to watch. I don't know if you watch any of the deleted scenes, but there's a deleted scene with him where he's like explaining one of the games that he loves playing. And this is a quote. This isn't me saying it, but he was like, actually, let me find it and play it because it's so fucking funny. I think it will come through in the recording. But he is, you're right, PFT. He was like the only one who had Steve Wiebe's back because he was just in his own world of like not even falling into the Billy Mitchell army. That God, how much like free hot sauce do you think he had to give all these guys to like fall in line at all times?
I'll be honest with you. Under I think the right he just circumstances, bought them. I could be brainwashed into joining Billy Mitchell's simp army.
He does and have he's alpha. Yeah, he has alpha qualities about him.
When they all had the trailer party for the viewing, like he probably bought the pizza for everyone.
I was telling myself like maybe I could
invite only
to join the Billy Mitchell simp army until I saw his car. That to me like brought his alpha status way, way down. He's driving like a white 2-door Geo Tracker or something like that. A guy like Billy Mitchell absolutely has to be minimum a Camaro convertible. Okay. Like I need you to be driving in some sort of red sports car. I don't need you to be pulling up in like a 1991 Chevy Cavalier. White, like as they roll it off the lot, doesn't even have a paint job on it.
Oh my God.
It should be noted though. Someone DM me and I don't know if we want to talk about the email, 'cause that was also hilarious, but Billy got like sued and stripped of all of his titles in 2016.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Which is good that, but again, it's classic Steve Wiebe. He has his documentary made about him and you have to go find out after that Billy Mitchell got everything stripped of his.
One other thing I noticed about this documentary is it was very, very short. So maybe it's just me being desensitized to watching like Game of Thrones and all this other stuff. I've been watching Tiger King, stuff that you can binge. It was about 75 minutes. And when it was over, I was like, wait, this is weird. Wait, you mean you're not going to tell me there's 3 episodes about Steve's high school baseball team to get like a full backstory on him? Yes. But then I was like, yeah, this is how movies typically are.
Yes, yes, absolutely. It's so true because if it was made today, it would be like 6 hours longer. And I would watch 6 hours more of this.
I would.
Can you guys hear this right now?
Well, my title, of course, is Crystal Castles.
I think I'm going to die here. I need the hat.
Crystal Castles is where you control a bear, as dumb as that sounds. Normally, I'd describe a game like that as gay, but it is a kick-ass game. I think it's one of the few games that has an ending, especially that early. It's like, I want an ending. No, we want the game to go on and on so players can play and new quarters won't come in the machine. Idiots. It's the suits and their low brain power. I'm a late bloomer. I think we talked about this before, but the neat thing is today's my birthday. I'll lead into that. In 83, I was 20. Today, I turned 43.
Oh, yeah. I noticed that earlier, and I've noticed that I didn't mention it to you guys. This is actually technically a weightlifting glove because I discovered in the 80s that you could buy a weightlifting glove which was fingerless, and I used it to play Marble Madness. See the double padding? The guys that played marble, they used to call it a marble hand. You would get calluses. You would get pinches. You would get bruising from the pinches that would get it. And so I said, you know, this is nuts. I'm going to get a glove and protect my hand when I play marble. So occasionally I play marble. Occasionally I use this to avoid calluses from certain joystick games. So that's the purpose of the glove. The top is breathable, so your hand doesn't get hot here. You can do marble madness or trackball all day long. Ain't going to do jack other than make the glove black. So that's the purpose of the glove. And I'm not sure very many people who wear it. But back in the 80s, they sold gloves like this, probably for like $20 or some ripoff.
So the weightlifting guy had a clip on these deleted scenes. Go watch all the deleted scenes where he's talking about one of the games he's awesome at, and it's called Crystal Castles. And he also thought he came up with like this innovative way of making all the games sound shorter. So he'd call like, he's like, Paperboy, I call that paper. Crystal Castles, I call that crystals. So he's like, Crystal Castles, you know, the main character is a bear, which, as dumb as that sounds, I'd usually call a game like that gay. And he just goes off on the Crystal Castles game. And it's like, I want a documentary about this guy because he's playing a fucking video game with his foot. He's wearing weightlifting gloves and he becomes friends with Steve Wiebe. It's like, that guy needs a full documentary about him.
Yeah, he's all over the place. We need to talk also about after Steve Wiebe gets the Donkey Kong record, Billy Mitchell has his thugs show up at his house and like knock on his door, and his wife's there, and his wife's like, I'm sorry, who are you? They're like, we're from Twin Galaxies. We're here to verify the Donkey Kong record. She's like, I got to go to work. Can you come back later? No, ma'am. No, we need to be let inside right now.
They're the, oh my God. And Billy Mitchell, he compared himself to the Red Baron, and he compared himself to the issue of abortion.
Yeah, he goes, I'm like the abortion issue. Everyone has a strong opinion on me. And then he goes, I'm not God. I don't have all the answers. And you can tell that he's just thinking like, I don't have all the answers yet.
But I kind of am God. He is God.
He also, the other thing with Billy Mitchell that I noticed is he's a big time, he kept saying this, like the thing over and over again, like, that tape's more important than you. Like you said it to the grandma, and they said it to Brian Koo.
Yeah.
And he's a big time. Yeah.
He rehearses his lines.
Yeah. That he just tape, says them over and over again.
He workshops every statement until it becomes a fine pointed sword. Yeah. Billy is,
he's a big time. He's a big time. Like at who's there. Tell me who's there. Tell me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who's there.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Who's there. And who'd they bring? What are they wearing? Like, oh shit. Steve Wiebe just showed up uninvited. Mm-hmm. Steve Sanders, that little fucking snitch. God damn it.
He was Steve's at my restaurant. I'll be right there. And then he pulls up in his fucking 91 Toyota Corolla with a tape deck that doesn't even work.
But at the end of the day, Billy Mitchell, we're trashing him. But man, the guy has charisma. And you know what he did? He also made it about country over everything. Because he wears that American flag and the Statue of Liberty tie. And he had that thing. He's like, you know what my initials are? USA. Mm-hmm.
There was one point that he was, I think his spin zone to himself was saying that it's anyone can get the Donkey Kong world record, but it's a lot harder to continuously be at the top of the leaderboard. So it's a lot harder to get like on top and then stay on top than it is to just get one. He was like minimizing Steve beating him.
Yeah.
And then somebody asked him a question about like, would you consider yourself the best video game player in the world? And then he did this thing where he paused for a second and he goes, gee, now that I think about it, I guess I would say that. But he clearly wasn't thinking about it. It was just him being like, yeah, yeah, I am.
Yeah, and then they pull back the camera, and it was actually Brian Koo asking him that, because that's what he asks him every fucking day. Like, hey, Billy, do you think you're the best?
Everyone should be so lucky to have a Brian Koo in their life.
Seriously, give me a Brian Koo. Let's track down Brian Koo. And we forgot to say, Foul Ball Guy making a couple cameos there with the shaved head was awesome.
It seemed like that was just his hangout. Like,
yeah,
they just like that wasn't, they didn't get him for the documentary. Like, he was just there.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I mean that one place in New Hampshire with all the video games looked awesome. Like,
yeah, the other notable guy was the chief referee. Like, I was just wondering how many records got either missed or like things that got overlooked. Cause like, there's just one referee just watching tape. Like, that's the only, that's
the
it.
Dude in the Doom 3 shirt.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, best that guy has quarantine hair before quarantine hair became cool. He had like all those FedEx packages of nothing but VHS tapes. He was like, yeah, this is about like 80 hours a week worth of work that I put in here.
Yeah, and then there was that other guy. I might have even been Brian Koo, who was like, yeah, I just retired at the age of 30 and I moved close to fun spots so I could play these games all the time.
No one talked about the quarter situation, though. Like, no one brought up how much money they were spending on these games. I assume that they're not free, right?
Yeah, I would assume they aren't. So they're just – well, I guess if you own the machine. But, yeah, you're right. The kill screen – I mean, I never knew that existed. That was fucking cool. when they're just like, yeah, the game just ends. Got a kill screen coming up.
That's the ultimate domination of a robot. You just make it kill itself. You're like, you've beaten me, human.
Oh, I mean, man.
Billy's footage was the most doctored footage of all time, too.
All time. But remember, I think this was taped in 2001. So it's like, this is before real Photoshops and all this stuff. So like, this is the last time that someone could actually pull this kind of shit off.
Yeah. I mean, I thought the documentary makers did a very funny job where it was like, these are the standards. And then it just shows them like being like, all right, yeah, it sounds like a good score.
You're good. Yeah. Billy. Oh, you
said go put it in the internet right now. Like,
yeah, Billy, you happen to send a tape in 10 minutes after Steve Wiebe broke your record. Oh, okay. Yeah. That works.
We never found out what happened with the Qbert score. He sent that lady to beat the world record in Qbert, and he gave her the tape. Did she end up doing that?
She was in the post credits, like the, oh no, she actually passed away. That was like in a loving memory of her. Oh,
come on.
That makes sense. No, but first it was like, whatever her name was.
Coronavirus? Billy Killer? Billy Killer because she like
still traveling the world, like trying to break the record. And then at the very end, it was like in loving memory.
Dude, Billy, I mean, that's the core of Billy right there. He will send an old, like, unsuspecting lady to New Hampshire, put her on a plane, be like, go break that Qbert record. But really, don't fucking lose this package. And he'll use her to get his way to be on top of the Donkey Kong leaderboard.
He bought her a Qbert machine, knowing that the only reason was that one day he could send her up to New Hampshire in the wintertime, be like, hey, the cold air will be good for your lungs. Sends her up there just to play a doctored videotape.
Oh my God.
And the only reason he wanted to do that was so that he could be sitting at home listening to his buddy Brian Koo tell him how the room was reacting. Billy, every eye is watching this tape right now. There are about 20 people here. Everyone is just glued to this screen watching you, Billy.
No one's going
to
miss this. Billy.
Yeah, more of a scene than Helena Troy is what he said. One of a kind. All right, that's our show. Unbelievable documentary. I mean,
should we end it with Sean Jones?
Let's end it with Sean Jones.
We're trying to get Billy on the show. What happened with that, Hank?
I had previously emailed with Billy and this other guy, Sean Jones, who was like told was like one of his guys for advisors, and he ghosted me. And so I hit him back up and they're like, oh, we're interested, blah, blah, blah. I'll let you know. They ghosted me again. And then I followed up today, like, please just, can I get an answer? And they're just like, oh, you know, he's got some lawsuits going on, but he'll be happy to come on whenever he has something going on. And the email is from Sean Jones, just a guy named Sean Jones. And PFT pointed out, he's like, Sean Jones is definitely Billy, right? Talking to third person.
That's absolutely. It's an assistant that Billy made up, like Trump made up John Barron back in the 80s to like talk to reporters and shit. Sean Jones, the fact that he emailed you immediately was like, Billy's got some lawsuits going on. He wants to talk to you and he will talk to you, but just give him a second to resolve all this. Like very, very clearly. It's another simp. It's probably Brian Koo. Okay, so it's not Billy. It might not be Billy. It might be Brian, but Brian has like too much of a workload from handling all of Billy's day to day. So he created another persona to handle more of Billy's work.
Yes. Yeah. Billy might not even know about Sean Jones. It might just be Brian Koo just trying to shield him, Billy, from the world.
Well, I tweeted out.
Made up like, a simp for himself to simp by proxy for Billy Mitchell.
It was, I will say that I tweeted out, I was like, Billy Mitchell is ghosting me right now. And within like 25 seconds, I got an email back. It was a shocking response time.
Wait, so crazy. did you tag Billy Mitchell?
Yes.
Okay.
But yeah, he just saw it and then Sean Jones happened to email you?
Correct.
Interesting.
After three emails from the past like 2 days of being like trying to get an answer.
Is Billy verified on Twitter?
No, Billy Pac-Man.
All right. Well, again, we'll hopefully get Billy on.
There are all these small clues that tell me that Billy's not quite as big of an alpha as I think that he was at first.
We'd love to have him on. So Billy, please, we'd love to have you on, talk to you about all of this. And all right, that's our show. We'll see.
Also, with all this video game talk, go subscribe to our Twitch channel.
Subscribe to our Twitch.
These guys walked so that we can run on Twitch.
True. Good point. And then everyone throw out documentary or things we could watch for next Friday. We'll just keep doing this. I think we should just keep picking something every week that we can review. And we'll just do it on Fridays because we've got nothing else to fucking do.
Mm-hmm. Maybe Game of Thrones. Maybe we all get into Game of Thrones.
We'll see everyone Monday.
Love you guys.
God, I really
Joffrey. I hate Joffrey.
I would love for them to make like an another one of these, or
talking away. No, I don't know what I'm to say. I'll say it anyway. Today's another day to find you shying away. No, I'll be coming for your love again. Shying away. No, I'll be coming for your love again. Take on me. Take me on. I'll be gone. Let your heart take. Needless to say, I won't say it. Stay up to me. It's so better to be safe than sorry. Take on me. Take me on. I'll be gone in a day or two. All the things that you say, yeah, is it a lot more? Just to play my worries away. You're all the things I've got to remember. And shine away. Coming for you anyway. Take on me. Take me on. I'll be gone in a day.
It's Pardon My Take, presented by Barstool Sports.